Excuse me, are we on?
I think so.
Thank you.
Hello!
It's Paul.
It's Nessa.
It's Paul and Nessa's Happy Hour.
A sketch comedy podcast with added stuff and nonsense.
I blew my nose today and it caused a nosebleed. That's mad, isn't it?
Series 2, Episode 6. Gary Lineker and the Peeping Bogeyman. Are you supporting Red Nose Day as well?
No. Actually, I've got high blood pressure and I'm a chronic alcoholic.
Oh.
Arsehole.
Welcome. Welcome, loyal listeners and followers, to this episode of Paul and Nessa's Happy Hour.
Yes. Now, due to circumstances beyond our control, this episode is going to be more of an edited highlights edition, isn't it, Nessa?
That's right, Paul. Indeed it is. You see, we had been planning to feature Kylie Lichberg-Ball in this episode with another one of his near the knuckle but very popular alternative children's storytellings.
But unfortunately, earlier this week, he released a tweet regarding the issue of the rewriting of many of Roald Dahl's books. Basically, he compared the decision of the publishers to make these changes to the mid-90s regime of the management at Heinz when they decided to drastically reduce the amount of actual oxtail in their oxtail soup.
Yes. Now, obviously, we had to take this matter very seriously. Kylie is associated and affiliated with Paul and Nessa's Happy Hour, and it is not our policy to either support or condemn the quality or indeed the manufacturing process of any tinned soup goods.
Heinz, Campbell's, the Covent Garden Soup Company.
They get the idea, Paul.
Sorry.
And so we had to take the difficult, but sadly inevitable step to withdraw Mr. Lichberg-Ball from this episode.
That's right. Unfortunately, in a bizarre and completely unnecessary show of so-called support, many of the other contributors to the show decided not to pitch up for work either. I mean, I don't know whose kids Kylie has got locked up in a cellar somewhere to command such misplaced and sycophantic so-called loyalty, but there you have it.
So, we apologise in advance, but there will be a few of the usual items missing from this episode. We hope it won't spoil your enjoyment and listening pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to be... Oh, great. Are you supporting Red Nose Day as well?
No. Actually, I'm a clown and I'm trying to entertain these children. Stop talking to me. How did you even get in here? This is a private party.
Oh.
Nubbed.
Hello, Violet.
Oh, hello, Nora. Fancy seeing you here in the cafe at Dobby's.
Yes, I just popped out to get my spring bulbs in and I thought I'd just stop off for me free cup of tea. I'm a member of the Dobby's exclusive club.
Oh, yes, me too. But I like to give me free cup of tea every month to an homeless tramp I meet on the street.
Oh.
Yes. Anyway, how are you getting on with your gardening these days? I never put you down as the green-fingered type.
Oh, yes, Vi. I'm a regular Carol Klein, I am. Yes, my chrysanthemums have bloomed spectacularly this year. Best in the whole cul-de-sac. Everybody said so.
Oh, that's nice. Well, it's funny that. Because I actually grew my sunflowers higher than my house this year. The whole avenue said that they were the highest and best sunflowers they'd ever seen in all their lives.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, did I tell you? I had a huge crop of my orchids on display at the county show this summer.
Oh.
Yes, and you know how hard they are to grow. Well, I won first place, didn't I? A lovely yellow rosette, commendation by all the judges, and a special mention in the Village and Church newsletter. They've asked me to be a judge next year.
I see. Of course, you know I won a gold medal for my best show garden design at the Royal Chelsea Flower Show in May.
Oh, did you now?
Yes. The judges praised the thematic style, the bold yet sympathetic use of contrasting flower species and colours, and the way I was conscious, yet not overpowered, by green energy issues and conservation.
Lovely.
The judges wouldn't even award a silver or bronze. They said, compared to my garden, everybody else's was crap.
Did you know I'm actually personal bestest friends with Monty Don?
What?
Yes. He's coming round mine for tea next Wednesday, actually. And he's asked me to look after those two gorgeous labs when he goes off on his tours. And he said he'll give me free personal advice on my gardening any time I ask him.
I was offered a job on Garden Rescue last month.
Oh, I turned that down last year, Vi. Both them rich brothers kept wanting to roger me behind the potting shed.
Mind you, I've never told you this, but I am actually a direct descendant of Capability Brown.
No.
Yes. We've traced it all the way back to where he lived in Northumberland in the early 1700s. And the house where he lived is still owned by our family. And the garden he designed there actually looks exactly the same as my garden in the avenue. So you could say that I have the genes of the man who designed the gardens at Hampton Court Palace, and that I came up with exactly the same garden ideas as he did.
Of course, it's good what you can find out when you trace your family back, isn't it?
It is, no.
Because when we traced our family back, we got as far as around 600 BC. And it turns out that my ancestor was King Nebuchadnezzar II, who, in a show of love and adoration for his wife, Queen Amytis, built the Hanging Gardens of Babylon.
Toasted tea cake.
Oh, there's my tea cake ready. See you later, Violet.
Bye, Nora, love. What a two-faced, lying twat that wrinkly old bitch is.
They used to run around with holes in their shoes. Now I'm wearing Barber.
And I'm in Jimmy Choo's.
The Dear Bees tuned to Radio 4.
The online shops from Waitrose.
Middle class observations.
So, we were watching telly the other night.
Yeah, well, shouting at the telly, you mean. That's my favourite pastime these days. I honestly think I could genuinely call it a hobby. No, shouting at the telly.
Yeah, I know. I have to be in the room when you're doing it all the time. Why can't you just get, like, a little train set in the shed at the bottom of the garden, like other middle-aged blokes?
Yeah, well, exactly. That's the middle-class observation, right? Because usually I'd be shouting at the telly because of bad continuity, or we'd both be shouting at, like, the fact that it doesn't make any sense at all.
Or that everyone's mumbling or acting badly.
Yeah, mumbling, acting. I must be good because I'm mumbling. All of that stuff. But that's... Right, so what is my favourite thing to say after we've... You know this. After we've binge-watched a whole series.
Well, that's 6 hours of me life I will never get back.
Nice impression.
Thank you. Right. Either that or biggest pile of shite I've ever seen in my life.
That one's handed down from my dad, actually. But anyway, so it wasn't any of that we were shouting at this time, because what? Right, go on, you say what were we shouting about at the telly when we're watching this programme that is our middle class observation?
Well, there was a scene in their big fancy kitchen, and the bloke was cooking their dinner, and there was an arga behind him.
Yeah.
Because he's doing very well.
Yeah.
And they've got an arga.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you do very well when you've got an arga.
Oh, yes, you must be doing well. Yeah.
But as soon as we both saw it, we said, well, that arga's not switched on.
Because we're doing very well. We've got an arga. When we got our big kitchen installed a couple of years ago, we got an arga put in. Yes, all right. But that was the thing. We saw this arga behind him in this scene. And it obviously wasn't on. It was obviously just a set that
was
being dressed. Because they had First of all, they had the two lids open.
Yeah.
And they had a pot, two pots on. One looked like it was just a pot of cold mashed potato or something, wasn't
it? And the other one was just looked like water with vegetables in it.
Yeah.
They weren't bubbling and they were just on the top.
There was no steam going off. Yeah. And like the one that was on the left plate, by the way.
The hot plate,
yeah. That would have been bubbling over. He would have needed a wooden spoon
on that. Seconds. But the scene lasted about 5 minutes. Yeah. And throughout the whole of that 5 minutes, there was not one bit of steam coming off of that,
exactly,
that pot.
Exactly.
Load of old rubbish.
The Aga wasn't on. And we knew because we've got one.
Who do they think they're trying to kid with their middle-class observations?
Right, now it's time for a word from our fake sponsors. Introducing a revolutionary new way for men to shave. The latest in shaving technology comes from the laboratories of Scimitar Razors. Our unique 17-blade razor means you get a close shave like you've never experienced. The little ball thingy in the middle means it will glide round the contours of your face, saving you the effort of having to slightly maneuver your wrist. And the patented strip of gerbil semen means no snicks, no cuts, no having to travel to work with bits of toilet roll stuck to your face. And of course, if you use our Scimitar razor, you'll instantly be more attractive, have bigger muscles, be better at playing football, get loads of women to shag you, and generally glide through life with an effortless ease that can only be dreamt of by weirdo hipsters who grow their beards too long. Scimitar razors, the best a gullible Gen Z can get. Now then, for this week's celebrity interview, we were supposed to be joined by Gary Lineker and some of his sporting cronies.
Not Alan Shearer, though.
Definitely not him. But apparently, they're too high and mighty to actually fulfil their contractual obligations.
Yes. So instead, we're joined by the much nicer Bill Gates. So, Bill, welcome to the Happy Hour studio.
Thank you.
But you can't stay for long, we understand.
You know, I have limited time.
Fair enough. What are you off to do next?
Killing the boogeyman behind the curtain.
Oh, right. Is there a boogeyman, then? Does he exist?
I think so.
Okay. Now, we know you're a fan of the show, aren't you? What do you think of us?
Super interesting.
Oh, thank you. And as a result, you wanted to give us a little gift, didn't you? So what did you want to give us?
Most of my money.
God, Bill?
I'm not God. I mean...
No, it was just an expression of amazement.
Anyway, as you haven't got long, shall we just get straight on with the quiz?
I think so.
Okay. What was the name of the short-lived New Wave band founded in 1977 by Glenn Matlock?
The Rich Kids.
Correct. Complete the title of the Celine Dion song, My Heart...
Will go on.
Correct. What is the job of a memory man?
To memorise things.
Correct. What would 8 out of 12 be expressed as a fraction?
2/3.
Correct. And how would that be being expressed if it was described as 66.6 recurring?
As a percentage.
Ooh, correct. What's the name of the indie rock band formed in 2010 by Justin Hayward Young?
Vaccines.
Correct. What are the opening lyrics to the Supergrass song, All Right?
I feel young.
Ooh, bad luck. It's actually We Are Young. Finally, complete the title of the 1985 John Hughes movie, Weird...
Science.
Correct. Well done, Bill. I said, you answered those questions pretty chilled. I mean, how are you so relaxed?
It's true, I'm very high.
Oh, right. Fair enough. That's thrown me a bit, actually. Sorry, where am I?
Concentrate.
Sorry, yeah. Okay, so just a few final quick-fire questions to end on.
So when you were at school, how did you find chemistry and physics?
A lot easier to understand than biology.
Yeah, me too. Now, how would you describe Posh Spice?
Pretty vague thing.
Now, how would an American pronounce the word malevolence?
It's malevolence.
Can you understand the success or popularity of Richard Osman?
No, it's strange.
It certainly is.
And finally, Bill, would you like to join us in a little sing-along? Come on, are we ready? Right.
I was walking down the lane when I felt a little pain.
Diarrhea.
Some people think it's funny, but it's really hot and runny.
Diarrhea.
It came from me bum like a bullet from a gun.
Diarrhea.
Nobody was in, so I did it in the bin.
Diarrhea.
Well, there you go. Bill Gates, thank you for joining us.
I discovered software.
We know.
Oh, great. Are you supporting Red Nose Day as well?
No, actually, I'm a teenager suffering from chronic acne and I've actually got quite severe mental health problems surrounding the body shaming issues that arise in this common but much scorned affliction.
Oh.
Twat.
Jokes that make you laugh, jokes that make you cry, jokes that are really, really funny.
Ha ha.
Jokes.
Oh, God.
How do you talk to a giant?
How do you talk to a giant? Go on, then.
Use big words.
That is kind of funny. Like.
A genuine one that you like. Time for our serial now.
The Case Files of Johnny Malone.
And this one's entitled Johnny Malone and the Naughty 90s.
It was Saturday, 2 o'clock in the morning. In Canberra, Australia, that is, which meant that here in my office it was 3 o'clock on a cold, wet, and slightly slimy Friday afternoon. I had already completed that day's Wordle, so I decided to feed the goldfish. I decided to feed it to the cat that Polly kept in the bottom drawer of her desk. The fish had been eyeing me for weeks. It kept calling me Bob, which wasn't my name. And this Friday afternoon, I snapped. Luckily, I had some human superglue, so I mended myself back together, then disposed of the swimmy little bastard. Just then, I heard a noise in the corridor, and suddenly, she crashed into my office. She parked her Citroen C5 in the top drawer of my filing cabinet, and with a deft triple pike, tuck, and somersault, she leapt out and landed in front of my desk. Unfortunately, she landed head first. Fortunately, my mattress was still there from having to sleep in my office the last few nights. Unfortunately, it was memory foam, and so buckled to her shape and let her head make contact with the floor underneath. Fortunately, the top of her head was also memory foam and absorbed most of the impact. She stood up and fixed me with her cold stare. Why she'd brought her a metal stepladder, I had no idea. But that didn't matter now. I recognised her immediately.
Johnny Malone. Do you recognise me?
Immediately.
What?
Sorry, nothing.
Bet you never thought you'd see me again, eh, Johnny?
Well, no, I thought you'd been dead for the last 20 years.
Ah, so did the fuzz.
It was Regina Crayfish, one third of the infamous Crayfish twins. They had run the criminal underworld of this city since the 1990s, when they came to prominence selling Gaza shell suits from the back of their Vauxhall Astra, and running nightclubs with names like Tequila Grannies, Glitter Fuck, and Quasimodo's Chicken Shack, which were all a front for their criminal operations.
So tell me, Johnny, how long has it been?
Well, about 8.5 inches when I get really aroused.
You know what I mean.
I had had some dealings with the crayfish twins a few years ago. When I was in the force, I tried to charge them with selling cheap, inferior versions of post-it notes, but I couldn't make it stick. What are you doing here, Regina?
I need your help, Malone.
You need my help. Why don't you just get your goons to do your dirty work?
We both know Spike Milligan, Peter Sellers, and Harry Seacombe are all dead. No, Malone. This case is for you.
Well, thanks, Regina, but I already own a briefcase.
Look, my husband has gone missing from the gang, and he's taken a dozen monkeys.
He's stolen £6,000 from you?
No, I actually mean a dozen monkeys. We're starting up a primate breeding program. I want you to track him down, get them monkeys back, and bring him back to me to deal with.
Say I refuse to do it.
I refuse to do it.
I can't take it on, Regina. I've just taken up crochet and I'm too busy.
Listen, Malone. The last person who refused me ended up with his testicles in a jar and his spectacles in a block of cement and his spectacles were still on his head. You understand? So are we speaking the same language?
All right, Regina, sure we are. Although I'm speaking American English, so I don't spell colour with a U.
You got 24 hours, Malone.
Until what?
Until it's 2:10 in the morning. Canberra time.
I trudged the rain-soaked streets, contemplating my next move. I was engaged in an online game of chess with Grandmaster 4537 from Bradford, and he had me tied up in a Falkbeer counter-gambit. Even though I'd agreed to take this case, I really wasn't comfortable. Probably because my underpants were too tight and there was a hedgehog in my shoe. I decided to go and do some thinking at my favorite hostelry in House of Desperation, the Fur and Knickers.
Hey, Johnny Malone, what do you say?
Barman Pete, it's good to see you. It reminds me that I haven't gone blind.
You want a bourbon, Johnny? I can put some rocks in it this time. We had a delivery just this morning.
Sure, Pete, why not? Smoke?
Oh, no, it's not allowed, Johnny. The smoke in bad, remember?
No, I mean over there. Smoke. Your tray of dry-roasted peanuts is on fire.
Oh, shit, not again. I'll be right back, Johnny.
As I looked around the bar, I saw the usual lowlifes and deadbeats, drowning their sorrows and watering their despair. In the darkest corner of the room, I looked hard, but couldn't see anything. It was way too dark. But in a lighter corner, I saw four men in long raincoats with pork pie hats pulled down on their heads. One of them had the unmistakable face of Maxie Duck's Feet Flapper, the husband of Regina Crayfish, and the guy I was looking for.
Just keep your heads low, boys, all right? We'll be out of here before you know it.
Maxie! I thought it was you when I was looking over here from over there.
My God, Johnny Malone, what you doing here?
I might ask you the same question.
Might ya?
What are you doing here? Well, there you go, you see, I did. I thought I might.
It's none of your business, Malone. Now, if you'll excuse us, me and my three business associates will be leaving.
Well, aren't you going to introduce me?
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Johnny Malone.
No, I mean to your business associates.
All right. Well, this is Thomas Thomason, Richard Richardson, and Harold Smith.
Well, it's good to meet you, Dick, Harry, Tom.
Why are you saying it like that? No one ever says it like that. It's Tom, Dick, and Harry. Everyone knows that.
Maxie, why is Tom eating a banana? And why is Dick scratching under his armpits and eating bits out of Harry's hair? Where did you say you worked, Harry? All right, Maxie, what's the game? These obviously aren't business associates. The three sets of four little monkeys on each other's shoulders in disguise.
I had to get them out of there, Johnny. They weren't safe.
But Regina told me they were starting a primate breeding program.
And they were going to film it all in explicit detail.
You mean monkey porn?
Shut up, Harry. You do not think it's a good idea and worth trying. It's despicable.
My God. All right, Maxie, leave this with me. Pete, hold that bourbon.
I am holding it, Johnny, to give to you, which I was just about to do.
There's no time for that now, Pete.
Well, I could have actually done it in the time you took to say there's no time to do it.
All right, Pete, just cool it. I have to go. I got a sting to organize.
You're Gordon Sumner's PA now?
Shut up, Borman Pete. The Crayfish twins had been getting their own way around this city for too long now, and it was time somebody put a stop to it. So, I got in touch with my old partner from F Division, Superintendent Freddy Pincer Crabtree. Then I called Regina and positioned us all in a disused warehouse, which was now, in fact, a used warehouse, seeing as we were using it.
So you found the little runt, did you, Malone?
I found him, Regina. I put a tail on him faster than a fat kid cheating at pin the tail on the donkey.
Hello, Regina, love. I'll deal with you later. Now, where are my monkeys? Right, you lot. Come on, we're going straight to the set. We've got some shooting to do. And I do not mean the kind where you take one of your enemies to an abandoned quarry and blast a shotgun through the back of their skull. I mean the sex industry filming kind, for clarity.
Not so fast, Crayfish.
Freddy Crabtree.
Superintendent Crabtree to you. We've got you banged to rights this time, Crayfish. Them monkeys are all wearing wires. Your illegal activities have been curtailed for good.
Damn you, Malone.
Right. I'd like you to accompany me to the police station for further questioning. Very nice. Nice harmonies from the monkeys there. And I mean the actual primates, not the old band, the monkeys. Most of them are dead now. Anyway, shut up and get in the back of the van.
It was Monday. 12 noon in Australia, and in a weird glitch in the space-time continuum, also 12 noon in the UK, and I was back in my office. News of Regina's arrest was splashed all over the tabloids. Unfortunately, it just made the paper all soggy and didn't make any sense. Credit for the arrest was solely given to my old pal, Pincer Crabtree, but that didn't bother me. I settled down to today's Wordle as I waited for the next case for Johnny Malone.
Well, there you go. We're nearly at the end of the episode.
We hope you've enjoyed it, despite everything. If you've been affected by any of the issues raised in this episode, behold the field where we grow our fox, etc., etc., you know the rest.
And remember, don't have nightmares, do sleep well. Good night.
Titty Fanny.
What?
Ta-ta for now.
Oh.
Oh, great. Are you supporting Red Nose Day as well?
No. Actually, I suffer from rhinophema and I'm on the way to the hospital now to have a painful, ablative laser treatment and a resurfacing procedure.
Oh?
Prick! You've been listening to Paul and Nessa's Happy Hour, conceived, written and performed by Paul Dunn and Nessa Caron.
Music was from filmmusic.io. For full credit details,
see the show notes.
The script editor was Paul Dunn. Happy Hour is a Crank Danville production.
Goodbye now.
Weirdo.
Can I have that beer now?
Oh, great. Are you supporting Red Nose Day as well?
No, actually, I'm Rudolph.
the red-nosed reindeer? You know me, you hired me. You're Santa Claus.
Oh,
cunt.